All right, what book are we in? Good news. We're halfway through the number of weeks we're going to be doing this. We'll pick up the pace a little bit at the other side. As you know, the story of Acts is the story of the early church, particularly the first 30 years. And the early part of Acts has material that nothing else has. So the events we covered so far, pretty much, we don't have any other source of information, which makes it priceless. So looking at Acts for everything from Pentecost kind of rolling forward. Now we turn to the story of Paul in the book of Acts, and that means we've got two resources. We've got the book of Acts, but we're also blessed with the letters of Paul. Paul primarily does not give biographical information, but occasionally does, and so those pieces are priceless as well. Back in Acts 9, last week, Luke narrated the story of Paul's Damascus Road experience, which is often referred to as his conversion, which is fine, as long as he remembers something. That it's not a conversion, which we sometimes think of that. He sees the risen Jesus. He receives this prophetic call. He is called by God to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And Paul will say that again and again and again. He's not called to the Jews. Paul is converted not from being a Jew to being a Christian, which is what I was taught in Sunday school, but so much for that Sunday school class, but from being a Pharisaic Jew to a member of the Jewish sect within Judaism. Paul and Acts are both clear. Paul, his entire life, thinks of himself as a Jew. The difference, he goes from being the enemy of the new movement to being one who defends and puts forward the new movement, which is quite a conversion in itself. Now, Luke gives us a little information here about what happens to Paul after the experience on the road to Damascus. He's going to give two vignettes, and we're going to look at both of those today. But then for some reason that Luke can answer, and I can't, he goes dark. And he skips a huge swath of time. The next time he mentions Paul in Acts 11, guess what? 14 years have passed. That is a fairly significant gap. And we find Paul at Antioch, which is that wonderful church where so much is going to be happening for the next several chapters. Now, if you read biographies of Paul or things about Paul and his letters, you'll find this is sometimes referred to simply as the lost years, as though we don't know anything about them. Well, if all we had was Luke, we would know nothing, except these two vignettes. But fortunately, we got Paul's letters. And we know that in Galatians and the 2 Corinthians and a teeny bit in Romans, Paul makes references back to a period in his life that Luke skips over. So we do have a little bit, and it's wonderful. So we can sort of sketch in here some bits and pieces of the lost years, kind of put that together, before next week we start rolling again in Acts. Now, it's interesting because when you compare Luke's narration with Paul's letters, a lot of it jibes very closely. Paul confirms weird things like he got in so much trouble in Damascus he had to be lowered down the outside wall in a basket. Now that's a pretty unique experience. Well, that's in Luke, and it's confirmed in Paul's letters. So those little pieces like that are there. At other times, what Luke says seems to be with odds with Paul's understanding of his own life. And in those instances, you probably would want to opt for Paul, not Luke on that. Again, it's not too huge, but the big difference seems to be a timeline. Luke is telescoping things. He's moving very, very quickly. And Paul lets us know, no, it didn't happen so quickly. It took 3 years for this, and then 14 years for that, and a lot of time passes. And we'll look at that today. So today our goal is simply to use Paul's letters to supplement what little bit we have in Acts and see if we can sketch out what happens between the road to Damascus and Paul arriving at Antioch. Make sense? It's a pretty simple task, and we've got some good material to work with. So let's begin with Luke's two vignettes. Luke's going to give us a little vignette in Damascus, and then he's going to give us a vignette in Jerusalem. So Paul's converted on the road to Damascus, and so this is what Luke wants us to know. Then Paul got up and was baptized. Okay? It happened quickly. And after taking some food, he regained his strength. For several days, Paul was in Damascus with his disciples in Damascus, which, by the way, is interesting. How long has he been a Christian? And he already has disciples. Isn't that interesting? And from Luke's perspective. Okay. Immediately, it's almost like the Gospel of Mark, that Luke's moving things along here. He began to proclaim Jesus in the synagogue, saying he is the Son of God. So who's he preaching to? According to Luke, Paul's preaching to Jews. All who heard him were amazed and said, is not this the man who made havoc in Jerusalem? In other words, we know you, and it's not good among those who invoked his name. So the Jesus community, even outside Jerusalem, knows this guy. And has he not come here for the purpose of bringing them bound before the chief priests? Remember last week in two of Paul's letters, Paul confirms this. Paul had a mission to exterminate the Christian movement. That's why he was on the road that day. Saul, at this point, this is his name, became increasingly more powerful and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus. So he's still working within the Jewish community by proving that Jesus was the Messiah. And after some time had passed, the Jews plotted to kill him. This happens a lot in Paul's life, okay? Seems to be a pretty standard response to Paul. Paul comes, Paul preaches, let's kill him, you know. But their plot became known to Saul. They were watching the gates day and night that they might kill him. But the disciples took him by night, let him down through the opening in the wall, lowering him in the basket. That's that one of those vignettes that Paul will confirm. Now, little vignette in Jerusalem. When he had come to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples. That would be the original disciples of Jesus, the 12 or 11 now. But they were all afraid of him, for they did not believe that he was a disciple. Can you blame them? No. These are rational folks. They understand who this guy is. They know his reputation. But Barnabas, key figure, both in the early church and in Paul's life, Barnabas took him, brought him to the apostles, and described for them how on the road he had seen the Lord who had spoken to him. Remember, Paul is a Hellenist. Barnabas is a Hellenist, but Barnabas is a person who stands in good with the Hebrews. And so Barnabas becomes that key figure that can make Paul welcome. How in Damascus he had spoken boldly in the name of Jesus. So Paul went in and out among them in Jerusalem, speaking boldly in the name of the Lord, kind of giving an image that Paul is now part of the Jerusalem church and is just, you know, and is part of that community there for some period of time. He spoke and argued with the Hellenists. That's one of those terms that can mean several things. Here, this would be other Hellenistic Jews who are not yet believers in Christ. But guess what? They want to kill him. Consistent reaction to Paul. Then the believers heard of it. They brought him down to Caesarea, which is down because Jerusalem's on top of a mountain, over the coast, and they sent him off to Tarsus. I'm not sure if they did that to protect Paul or to protect themselves. The jury's out on that. Now, this is it. Luke gives us two vignettes, a little bit in Damascus, a little bit in Jerusalem, and then 14 years are going to pass. In Luke's version, it's pretty clear. The moment he is converted, Luke wants to send that. This is pretty much Paul the Apostle. He hits the ground running, doesn't he? Preaching to the Jews powerfully, not intimidating, converting them, stirring up trouble everywhere he goes, proclaiming that Jesus is the Son of God. And again, with that predictable response, people want to kill him. We're going to look at that here in a few minutes. Paul pretty much confirms that. Paul even has his own disciples in Luke's view. They lower him down the basket, the city wall. They allow him to secretly slip out of town. Goes to Jerusalem. Same thing happens, you know. He stirs up things. People want to kill him. And essentially, they have to get rid of him, it looks like. So either they or he or both can be safe. It appears as long as Paul's in the town, it's not good, okay? He's just one of those people who stir things up. Luke uses the language immediately several times, a matter of days, maybe a matter of weeks, but the idea here is it's pretty quick that this is happening. Now, we turn to Paul's letters, and Paul confirms a lot of what Luke says. He did get in trouble in Damascus, and he did have to be let down in the basket. He tells us that in 2 Corinthians. The story's a little bit different. In Damascus, the governor and King Artus guarded the city of Damascus in order to seize me, but I was let down the basket through the window in the wall and escape from his hands. According to Paul, who did he get in trouble with? Yeah, the king and the governor, by the way. Paul confirms he went to Jerusalem. He spent some time there with the apostles. He says this in Galatians 1. I did go up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas, who's Peter, stayed with him for 15 days. Now, why would you do that? What was that?
Training.
In what?
In
yeah. Peter knew Jesus. Paul did not. Peter's sort of the key apostle. So if you're Paul, you're converted to this new faith, you might want to know something about the Jesus. It's ironic, though, that Paul has very little biographic information in his letters about Jesus. There's a little bit. But it would make sense to stay with Peter and kind of, you know, to hear the story from those who were there. Paul confirms some of Luke's details, but the timeline is pretty radically different. Luke seems to want us to understand, maybe because he's telling the story very quickly, that everything happens immediately. We're having days or weeks here. Paul tells us the events happened over a much longer period of time. Paul tells us that it's 3 years that this stuff happens. So we go now back to Galatians where Paul says this. But when God was pleased to reveal his son to me, that is a reference to the conversion experience, so that I might proclaim him to who? Gentiles. Paul consistent on that every time he says that. I did not confer with any human being, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were already apostles before him. Interesting. I went away at once to Arabia. Big area, by the way. Afterwards, I returned to Damascus. Then, after 3 years, I did go up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas, stay with him 15 days. So, in Damascus, Luke has Paul immediately preaching. He's preaching to Jews in the synagogue, and then he goes to Jerusalem. This is consistent with how Luke wants us to understand Paul. Paul says he did not stay in Damascus. He spent time with the disciples there or preached in the synagogues there. Rather, he left at once to go to Arabia. Luke also wants to present Paul as converting fellow Jews in Damascus and Jerusalem. Matter of fact, one of the great themes of Acts is this is how Luke portrays it. Paul goes into a town. He goes to a synagogue. He preaches to the Jews. By the way, how does that work for him? Consistently. And then Luke has this dramatic, and Paul will say, and we then turn to the Gentiles. Okay. In Paul's own understanding, he's never called to go to the Jews. He's called by God to be an apostle to the Gentiles. Paul will consistently, repeatedly say that the Gentiles are his ministry, not to the Jews. Luke says that Paul spent time with the Hellenistic disciples in Damascus. Paul confirms that he did spend time in Damascus. He does this in Galatians as well as 2 Corinthians, mentioning that there is some time that's there. But it's not immediately. Luke seems to be telescoping events here. For Paul, it's only after his visit to Arabia. We don't know. He's in Arabia and Damascus for 3 years. We don't know how much was in Arabia or how much was in Damascus. Most scholars say it's likely Arabia was a temporary thing, and then he would have returned to Damascus. Paul says, actually, it's 17. There's 3 years in Arabia. Then he goes to Jerusalem, and then 14 years later, he returns back to Jerusalem. But yeah, correct me on that timeline.
Well, I'm just curious, what was in Arabia?
Interesting, yeah. Arabs, and our oil. Our stereotype is nothing. So another example of a man of God goes out in the desert, sits under a bush, and ponders his life. Here's what we know about Paul. Paul was a city boy. He was a capitalist. He spends his entire life going from Roman capital to Roman capital to Roman capital. Arabia is a large geographic area. It's a Roman province, and it has a capital. The likelihood is that he probably went to the capital. Where is the capital? Petra. So when you visit Petra, there's no evidence of this, but if you just sort of infer, most scholars say it's likely he may have spent some time there. We don't know that for a fact, but that is possible. So there's the Petra connection. And Bob, on that time deal there, I'll have to get back with you on that. I missed my math more than once. Okay, just seeing it. 14-ish. We'll go with that. Now, Luke tells us that Paul at Damascus, because the Jews plotted to kill him. Again, this is standard for Luke. This is how Luke consistently wants to portray Paul. Paul gives an entirely different reason. I mean, this is outside the box reason. It's not because of the Jews. It's not even for religious reasons. It's not because he was preaching in the synagogues. It's not because he's proclaiming Jesus as the Messiah, at least not explicitly. The reasons were political. He ticked off the king. That's why you might want to get out of Dodge quickly and don't trust the gate, go out the side window, go down the wall, okay? You know, in a basket, yeah, which he confirms. He got into trouble with King Artus and with the governor. Paul does not say why, but this is, again, one of those instances where Luke and Paul may not be that far different, because we do know in the Roman world preaching the Christian faith would get you in trouble. Preaching Jesus to be God or Son of God would get you in trouble. So you can read between the lines there, and it's not that different that he could have got. And let's face it, it's Paul. He could have ticked everybody off, okay? He could have been upset at both. Galatians is clearly referring to the same event that Acts is, because that's just too specific. How many times in your life do you have to escape a city in a basket down the wall? I'm thinking for most people, not even once, but for Paul, it's once. It is possible, again, that they're not that different. He could have been in trouble with the governor and with the Jews, but from Paul's own biography, he would play down any Jewish content. Luke's account in Jerusalem is even more problematic in terms of Paul's letter. Paul's not there in a matter of days or weeks. It's only after 3 years that he ever even makes it to Jerusalem. By the way, that's significant. Paul will not have any contact with Jerusalem Christianity, the Hebrews, for 3 years. So for 3 years, where is he getting his version of the Christian faith? From the Hellenists. And we know in Paul's letters in Acts that the Hellenists and the Hebrews have two different understandings of what it means to be a Christian. So this 3-year window that Paul talks about actually opens up something very interesting. In Luke's account, Paul's a resident in Jerusalem. He only goes to Damascus to arrest the believers. After a few days in Damascus, he turns to Jerusalem. That's sort of the Acts narrative. Paul seems to indicate that there's little connection with Jerusalem. He was living in Damascus, and it said he returned to Damascus. So Luke seems to be sort of Jerusalem-centered. Paul seems to be more Damascus-centered. Luke wants to link Paul to Jerusalem, and according to Paul, he's only go there 3 years. For Luke, here's what's important. Luke wants us to understand that the faith began in Jerusalem with the 12 disciples, and that any developments within the faith are sort of under that umbrella. So Luke goes out of his way to wed Paul to the Jerusalem church so that we understand that. And remember, who was the first to convert a Gentile? Philip. And then who was the second? Peter. Who's the third? Paul. So this whole Gentile ministry, in terms of how Luke portrays it, this whole Gentile ministry, it's not a Paul thing. Okay, it's Peter, particularly, who did that. Later, Paul is going to have a falling out with the leaders of the Jerusalem church, and they're going to hound him for decades, and there's just going to be this running battle. And so when we get to Galatians, Paul has been hounded by them, and he's just mad. And he wants to put a lot of distance between himself and Jerusalem. I did not go there. I did not talk to them. They have no say in who I am. And he will say that. In Galatians, flat out. So he wants some cover from the Jerusalem church because they're different. Even when he goes, he's only there for 15 days, only to meet Peter. So the idea that Paul is an active, dynamic member of the Jerusalem church, what does Paul think? No. I went there, and he does mention, and I talked to John. I went there to see Peter, and I talked to John. But those are the only two I talked to. For 14 years, before he visits Jerusalem again. Again, downplaying the Jerusalem connection. Galatians, Paul seems to be writing to counter the very view that is presented in Acts, that he went up to Jerusalem immediately, that he's part of the Jerusalem church, and sort of by inference that he's kind of under their authority. And their being under their authority is the last thing in the world Paul wants to admit. So it leads us to Galatians 1. After 3 years, I did go up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas. I stayed with him for 15 days. I did not see any other apostle except James. Sorry, it wasn't John. It was James, the Lord's brother. That's interesting. After Peter leaves, who's the head of the church in Jerusalem? James. And what I am writing to you, before God, I do not lie. A little energy here. I'm not lying to you. I have no connection with the Jerusalem church. And they have no claim over me. Then I went to the regions of Syria and Cilicia, up where Antioch is and where his home is. Paul even says later in Galatians he was unknown in Judea. I was still unknown by sight of the churches in Judea that are in Christ. Now, what's the biggest church in Judea? Jerusalem. And Paul says, they don't know me. Luke sort of imagines that he's sort of moving in that circle, part of the church. Paul, not so much. Now, the book of Acts wants to depict Paul as subservient to the mother church in Jerusalem, because one of Luke's big themes is, it's kind of like the Rodney deal out in California, why can't we all just get along, you know? Luke will consistently downplay controversy because he wants to project an image of the church as united. Paul does not have that agenda. He doesn't mind shaking out the dirty laundry and calling some names, which he will do on occasion. But, on the other hand, it is possible that Luke may not be that far off the mark, because in spite of Paul's vociferous denials of everything, at other places he lets some little hints out that it may not have been quite as cut and dried. That he might have actually spent more time in Jerusalem, Judea, than he would be willing to admit in the Galatians. In Galatians, he's trying to distance himself from the Jerusalem church and their authority, and what he calls the super apostles that just irritate him. But in other places, he gives this little hint. A time before the events he narrates in Galatians. So, a time when he's doing exactly what Luke says he did. So we're going to use Paul against himself here for a second, okay? This is Romans. From Jerusalem and as far as Illyricum, I fully proclaim the gospel, the good news of Jesus. Where did he start preaching? Where has he just denied he spent any time? Which do you believe? I'm thinking that this indicates that he did spend some time in Jerusalem and he was preaching. But in Galatians, he didn't want to admit it.
Where is Galatia? I assume that he was writing to the church at Galatia.
Right. You know where Turkey is, Asia Minor?
Uh-huh.
Okay. If you get in the middle, the southern part is called, not the very bottom, but there's a part called Southern Galatia, and above that's called Northern Galatia. One of the big debates in Paul's deal is when he writes Galatians, is he writing to Southern Galatia, which is where the first missionary journey, that's Pisidian Antioch, Derby, that's Southern Galatia. Later, there's some growth up in the north. But yeah, Galatia, this figure, dead center. Today it would be Cappadocia. If you've been to Turkey, to Cappadocia or Cappadocia, they have those wonderful balloon rides there you can go on. Too much information, sorry. Second statement, Galatians, also raises questions about his denials. You've heard, no doubt, of my earlier life in Jerusalem. Oh yeah, we heard about you, Paul. I was violently persecuting the church of God and was trying to destroy it. Now, if he's not known in Judea, when and where was he persecuting the church and trying to destroy it? What's the best candidate for a place he was trying to destroy the church? Jerusalem. And most scholars would say probably Jerusalem. So we think that Paul's got some reasons to downplay Jerusalem when he's writing Galatians. But in other places, Paul's letting us know, yeah, what Luke says, yeah, there's some truth to that, okay? Now, where did Paul learn about the faith? Or to let the cat out in this one a little bit, but in Acts, we have this initial cursory introduction about Ananias and others in Damascus. And by the way, if he spent 3 or 4 days there, he would have learned a little bit about the faith, okay? Would make sense. Then he goes to Jerusalem, and he spends 15 days with Peter and James. So which of the two would be likely to be more influential? Jerusalem, okay? Paul would learn about the faith from the apostles in Jerusalem, okay? Paul says he had been a believer for 3 years before he goes to Jerusalem or met any disciples who knew Jesus. This indicates that for the first 3 years, he's likely living and proclaiming the faith that he had learned not in Jerusalem, but in Damascus, which is more of a Hellenistic Judaism of the exile kind of Christianity learned in Arabia. It also means his formative years in the faith were shaped not by the people and the understanding of the faith of Jerusalem, but by the Hellenistic Damascus church. By the way, this would make sense then of by the time we get to Acts 15 and there's this big fight, big split in the church about whether or not you have to be Jewish to be Christian. Do you have to be circumcised to be Christian? Do you have to be kosher to be Christian? Can a Christian eat with a non-Jew? And all these issues become so huge. Well, you got Jerusalem advocating the conservative viewpoint, Antioch and the diaspora arguing the liberal viewpoint. And Paul's on the liberal side. Well, it makes sense. Where did Paul learn his faith? In Damascus, which is more like Antioch than like Jerusalem. Later, he could have drawn on the Jerusalem tradition he learned for 15 days with Peter. And again, he does seem the ability to provoke people. So I thought we might want to look at that for just a second. Luke tells us that the first reaction to Paul in Damascus was, you know, let's kill him, okay? And then he goes to Jerusalem. What's the first reaction? Let's kill him. Let's get him out of the country so we can be safe. In Jerusalem, the apostles have descended off to Tarsus, and it's not clear who is being protected by that decision. In his letters, Paul actually confirms that he's a highly controversial figure. In one of those letters is 2 Corinthians. Here's what Paul, a little bit of autobiography, one of these little snippets. I have had more imprisonments. How many would you like that on your resume? I've been in jail more than you have. Yeah. Countless floggings, have often been near death. 5 times I've received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I received stoning. By the way, stoning is always to the death. So it means they stoned him. They thought he was dead. They just didn't finish the job. Yeah. I wouldn't want his life. You know that picture we got out here, Paul, from the movie? Just look at some of all the scars. You know, he's just, yeah, that's who he was. Now, flogging and stoning are both Jewish punishments. He could have only gotten these in Jewish synagogues. Well, Paul the Apostle to the Gentiles, by his own admission, on several occasions, stirred up the Jews enough to receive the Jewish punishments. Make sense? So even though he's the Apostle to the Gentiles, he had to have done something in the synagogue that offended the Jewish residents there as well. There are some differences in content between Luke and between Paul. But, you know, let's face it, they're relatively minor. The business of focusing on Jews or Gentiles, clearly Paul is called to be an apostle to the Gentiles. But do you remember where Paul would go? If you go into a town, where would you go if you're Paul? Why would you go to a synagogue? Yeah, I'm apostle to the Gentiles. In the synagogue are a group of Gentiles who are already predisposed to accept my message. They're called the Theosebon, the God-fearers. So, as the apostle of the Gentiles, it makes sense. Yeah, he's going to go to a synagogue because that's where the audience is, Gentiles who are likely to respond. Well, there's some other people in the synagogue who are not as likely to respond, and that would make sense of some of the things that happened, you know. Whether or not he was a part of the church in Jerusalem, it is clear that Paul in Galatians wants to downplay this, by his own admission, there may be more there that Luke leans into than Paul wills to. The big difference, though, is the timeline. Luke wants to move things along, and Paul wants us to understand that this was a very slow process. Again, Paul is writing in the year 85-ish. Paul has already been dead for 20 years. We know who Paul was. Paul is the apostle we all know. And so in Luke's mind, he presents the Paul he knows, which is not the young Paul, but the mature Paul. Paul's writing reflecting back on when he was the young Paul, and it's a little bit different kind of presentation. Most scholars would say, roughly speaking, Paul's version is more likely historically. And so here's the timeline of Paul that you'll get from a textbook on Paul. After his conversion, he goes away for a while in Arabia. Most likely place would have been Petra, although we don't know that. He goes, presumably, you know, why would you go there? Well, I don't know, if you'd been blind for 3 days and knocked on the ground, might you have something to think about? Yeah. So maybe that's reading too much into it, maybe not. Perhaps he also went there to proclaim the faith, because that's what God called him to. And by the way, Petra would be full of what? Gentiles. It's a major Roman area. Paul's silence in this period makes it unlikely, this is one of the scholarly comments, that his ministry was successful there. If he did anything there, Paul's not willing to run it up the flagpole and talk about it. The description in Romans, his ministry begins from Jerusalem, also excludes Damascus, it excludes Arabia. So if he did anything in Damascus, if he did anything in Arabia, from Paul's mature thought, he's saying, really, I really got started in where? Jerusalem, which is exactly what Luke says.
Is Cephas a fellow we encounter frequently, or is he a functionary in this, or what?
Cephas is Peter. Peter has two names.
Oh.
Okay, his Hebrew name, Cephas, and then Jesus calls him the rock, Petrus, and he's called Peter. And by the way, that was very, very common. And also, in the Bible, a lot of characters get their name changed, indicating a new direction in their life.
A.K.A., also known as.
Right. He becomes, and according to Matthew, Jesus says, you are Peter, and upon this rock, play on his name, I will build my church. And that becomes the basis of the Catholic tradition of the authority of the Pope for the future. It's just Peter the fisherman, yeah, but Cephas. And it kind of goes back and forth as to how he's referred to. Like Saul and Paul, it'd be lovely if it just said Saul, Paul, but it overlaps some. So it's sort of in the middle there. Paul uses the word Paul, because who's he writing to? Gentiles, and that's his Gentile name. Jews would have known Paul as Saul of Tarsus. He spends time in Arabia, he returns to Damascus, again, presumably a part of the community. He's instructed in the faith to be a part of their mission. It's likely, scholars think, that most of the 3 years would be in Damascus because he seems to have more anchors there than he does in Arabia. Again, Paul's silence probably indicates that if he was active in ministry in Damascus, there's nothing that happened there that he's willing to lift up and say, you know, look what I did. And he had several good occasions to do that. So, from Jerusalem's statement of Romans, assumes his ministry again begins in Jerusalem. Now, the only clue that Paul gives is that he managed to get in trouble with the king and the governor. Paul, again, does not tell the story, but we know that the story is exactly the same. We know that preaching Jesus as the Son of God or God does have political implications. The entire book of Revelation is written to deal with that issue. This is early, so it's not sure how much of that's going on at this point. Paul does never hint at any trouble with Jews in the synagogue, except when he said he was stoned and beaten with rods. So that would have to be in the synagogue. After 3 years, he makes the trip to Jerusalem to see Peter, presumably, just reading between the lines, he wants to learn more about the person his faith is based on. He returns home to Tarsus, grew up there, family was there. He probably would have been in the leather business. Tent making was associated with leather. Could he have been active up there in ministry? Could be, but he never mentions that at all. He stays there until Barnabas comes and brings him to Antioch to join the outreach of the Gentiles. Now, This is a reconstructed timeline, but it's pretty standard. Jesus dies in the year 30. We're pretty confident of that. Paul is converted no later than 33. Maybe as early as late 30 into 31, but probably a couple years at the most. 33 to 36, Paul goes to Arabia, then returns to Damascus. Damascus is included in that. 36, Paul escapes from Damascus in the basket, spends 15 days with Peter in Jerusalem. Then he goes to Tarsus. Again, we're rounding some figures off here. 36 to 40, Paul is in Tarsus, roughly around 40. Barnabas brings Paul to Antioch. He will be a part of the church in its ministry, by the way, for the next 10 years. Paul will be active in the church at Antioch as long or longer than his three missionary journeys and his active ministry that we know. 40 to 47, he lives in Antioch. He's a part of the Gentile church there. It's during this period that we have in Corinthians this really interesting reference that he has this out-of-body vision caught in the third heaven. That's found in 2 Corinthians. Again, you got that timeline. I know a person in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up into heaven. Classic mystical experience. He goes into some detail about that. 47 A.D., the lost year has come to an end. Luke will pick up the Paul story after that 14-year gap. And next week we'll then look at Antioch and the first missionary journey. So we've got a couple of minutes if y'all want to kick around anything about this. Yes, Chester.
In Chicago are operating just about like the people that you just described. And about the 14 years, it's a miracle that we have paper today or records of things. It's quite possible that somebody that wrote as much as Paul did and others,
yeah,
for it to be silent for 14 years is unlikely. It would seem like that,
yeah,
it just didn't get uncovered. It's, yeah, buried somewhere near the Dead Sea or something.
We know that Paul's a letter writer. So, obviously, he probably wrote all kinds of letters back then. There's nothing that the church gets preserved, as far as we know. It's only when he gets over into Greece and Turkey and churches he founds and he begins to communicate with them, those churches seem to be the ones who preserve those letters because they're valuable to him. But yeah, I mean, it's possible someday that you can find something out there. I don't know. But, yeah, it seems to be a big gap. And you kind of wonder, well, what was he doing? I mean, this is Paul we're talking about. Even in his hometown, I'm thinking he's probably doing what Paul did the rest of his life.
Zealous.
Yeah, zealous and probably getting in trouble. And his family's probably trying to do what most families do, rein you back in, you know, keep you from embarrassed. But we simply don't know. Luke has a story he wants to tell, so Luke just leapfrogs to the next big event. The next big event is Antioch. With Barnabas and Paul.
This might be a little speculative. You made me think about being the beginning of these ministries, you go to Arabia. One of the reasons he might have gone there for a time period, he's a tent maker. Where would be an office, mm-hmm, where he's making tents.
Yeah.
Earn up his money for travel. He has to have something to help travel.
Right. We know in Acts and Paul's letters, for example, when he goes to Corinth, when he goes to Ephesus, he earns his living. He's very proud of that. He doesn't have to rely on other people. He earns his living by being a tent maker, a leather worker.
That would be a good place to do it.
Would be a superb place to do it. And by the way, sitting under a bush somewhere in the desert probably wouldn't do it. You're going to run out of cash pretty quick. So, you know, again, it's hypothetical. Yes.
Implied that he had to go learn the faith.
Yeah. one thing is, there's no evidence at all that even though Paul and Jesus were in the same town at the same time, there's no evidence that Jesus ever, that Paul ever met Jesus. One. That he would have known the story, at least some of the story of the movement, makes total sense.
But he would have known one half of it.
Yeah. But I would still think that I would want to go and hear it from the horse's mouth, people who had actually lived, been with Jesus in Galilee and things. I mean, that makes total sense. Yeah, because one of the things you want to do when you become a person of faith is you want to know more about your faith. But the other thing that's kind of wild with Paul, and we don't know the answer to this, Paul seems to be more concerned about the risen Christ than about the historical Jesus. He almost never quotes anything that Jesus said. But he talks a lot about the risen Lord and even the presence of the risen Lord within the church. It's just a different kind of emphasis. The gospel writers go the other direction. They're very interested in the details of the life of Jesus, what he said, what he taught, where he went, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's just a difference, yeah.
But there's a big gap in Jesus' life, too.
Yeah.
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 That nothing is said.
Yeah, up to 30, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it has to do with what parts of that person's life affect the future. And Jesus' ministry, particularly with Galilee, but also his death and resurrection, those events gave birth to the faith. What of Paul's life gave birth to the faith? Well, it's those few years he's operating in Greece and Turkey on the second, third missionary journeys. Those seem to be the key pieces. And so those things get lifted up. We have a lot of information. We have a lot of curiosity about the other stuff, but we simply don't know. Yes? Okay.
See, think of all the times in the newspaper you pick up when some politician hates somebody or hates something, and they bring up a whole number of implausible deals to indicate they don't have a clue about it.
Mm-hmm.
He could have just known I'm supposed to go out and persecute these people without knowing why.
Yeah, without the content. Yeah, yeah. We know from Acts and from Paul two things. We'll end with this. One, that he admits that he was trying to exterminate the Christian faith. That's from Paul and Acts. From Acts, we learned that he knew the high priest enough that he could go to the high priest to get letters to take to Damascus, which makes him a political functionary there. How much he knew about the faith, we simply don't know. We'll pick up the story next week. Let's do first verse, Jesus calls us.